Hey there, I'm Amy, and welcome to the podcast, Fearlessly Facing 50. This podcast is about conversations and connections, and my mission is to encourage women over 40 to live their best life. You know what, ladies? We haven't peaked yet, and we are just getting started. So if you're ready for some real talk with real people and real conversations about what really matters, you found the right place. I'm ready. Are you ready? Let's get started. Let's get real. Hey there, I'm Amy, and welcome to the Fearlessly Facing 50 podcast. Thanks for joining in today. And before we get started with our topic, I have to share something with you. And actually, I want to shout this one from the rooftops because I think it's that great. So about 18 months ago, actually about 20 months ago, I got a hold of something that I think was a game changer. Actually, I know it was a game changer. If you're familiar with Dr. Christy Funk, she is a breast surgeon. She is all about kicking breast cancer's butt. And she is very well known for research and development around all things menopause, hormones, cancer. You name it. About a year ago, she was on GMA with Amy Robach, who is a breast cancer survivor herself. And she went into early menopause, and they were talking about something. I have been trying something called Menopause Miracle. Now, hey, we're midlifers. We are out there. We are either in perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. We got to hit one of those things. It's like puberty. It starts, it ends, and there's a middle. That's not so great. But you know what? Menopause Miracle has been amazing. It's a one-a-day supplement that I've been taking. It helps with hot flashes. It helps with rosacea, which I developed in perimenopause. It helps with everything. So if you wake up and you're in a deep sweat and you're thinking the fan's blowing on me and I really don't like this, or lack of sleep, or just forgetfulness, all of that stuff that comes with menopause, give it a try. I will link Menopause Miracle. You can read about it in the episode notes, but check it out. It's definitely worth it. It's been a game changer for me. Today's episode, we're going to be digging deep into the topic of aging parents, something that I know is near to dear of many of your hearts. As we hit middle age and beyond, we see changes in our parents, and sometimes it can create challenges. So sit back and enjoy my conversation with caregiving expert Kelly Bradley. It's something that becomes common in our conversations with our friends and family at this stage of life. There are challenges, for sure, but there are also so many resources available for us. And Kelly is here to share not only her own personal journey, but her professional expertise to dig deeper into areas that we need to really open the dialogue about. So Kelly, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here today.
I'm so happy to be here, and it's an honor, really, Amy. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. There's so much information here that I had mentioned in my pre-record that we're going to break this into a series. In addition to that, Kelly has some other resources available to you that she will talk about. But I don't want you, when you're listening, you're going to listen to this and you're going to say, wow, there is so much I need to do. And Kelly and I both have the same, we're aligned on this goal of we don't want it to be overwhelming. We want it to be a resource. We want it to be insightful. So as you go along with this, just realize that there will be a series. This will be a series. Kelly will be on a couple of times, as well as she has resources available to really dig deeper into some things that we might just hit the, you know, right on the periphery of. So Kelly, could you just share a little bit about your personal journey?
Sure. So when I was in my 30s, my mom was diagnosed with diabetes, and at the time it just didn't seem like a big deal. But fast forward over the course of this horrible chronic disease, she had seen over 47 different doctors.
47.
Wow. Yeah, we went from everything from diabetes, basically it took her vision. So she was clinically blind. She lost her kidney function, so she was on dialysis. She had open heart surgery, breast cancer, pancreatic cancer, and neuropathy.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was pretty heart-wrenching. And
yes,
just even, I know that your listeners, most of them will never go through such a medically complex experience, but caring for her led me to own and operate an in-home care company for 11 years. Because as we were out, you know, visiting with doctors and going through this experience,
right,
I kept seeing so many people that didn't have family support. And I was thinking to myself, well, what happens to them?
Right. Exactly.
I have family support and I'm desperately seeking more help.
Right.
So
right.
Long story short, in the middle of all this, I started the in-home care company.
Exactly.
And during that time, I served over 1,000 families, but I kept hearing the same questions over and over again. And it's like, I thought to myself, let's face it. Nobody teaches you how to care for your aging parents.
No, they don't. They don't. It's just something that you almost shy away from, to be honest, because you just don't know. It's such a, you wrote something in your book that said the person that was your hero now needs help paying her bills. I mean,
yeah,
that is so telling right there. I mean, it really makes you think. And I had mentioned to Kelly, just when we got on, started our conversation, that last night's episode of This Is Us really start, I mean, this whole process of dealing with aging parents, the mom has early stages of dementia or Alzheimer's. You can see how there's going to be a change in relationship with the siblings. I mean, this is something that I applaud you for what you're doing and just getting the expertise and, you know, allowing us to learn from you. I mean, I just think that's what we need.
Well, and for most of us, we think of people in their prime.
We think
of them. We think of our parents as the parents who raised us, the people who, you know, my hero who picked me up from school when it was rainy.
Exactly.
I think of my mom doing laundry and running around and running the PTA and doing all the things she did, and as an accomplished woman. And all of a sudden, disease. And for us, it happened. You know, she was young. I was young.
Right. You said you were in your 30s. I remember seeing that, you know, you're in your 30s. You're kind of at the height of looking at your life and being pretty me-centric at that point. You know, you're thinking I'm in my career. I'm raising my family. I mean, and then this happens.
Right.
It stops you in your tracks.
It does. And for those of you who are going through this at a younger age, I'm there for you.
I feel it.
Because what happens too is no one gets it.
Right.
You know, you're like, I can't do that. I have to take my mom to a doctor's appointment. They're looking at you like, what? Why can't she go by herself? What the heck?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, exactly. They don't really understand. And now that I'm in my 50s and my friends are going through it, they're like, oh, now I get it.
Now I get it. Yeah. So Kelly, could you walk us through a conversation that's needed with our parents? And to be honest, let's start with this question. When is the best time to start a conversation like this?
So that's the million-dollar question, and actually the most commonly asked question. And I was reading an article in a widely known publication that will remain nameless, but they were suggesting that the best time to have the talk was during the holidays. And I thought, what the heck?
Oh, really?
I don't think so.
No.
Who enjoys being ambushed, right?
Right.
I mean, I just want you to think about this. I mean, the birds and the bees was a difficult conversation. And if you thought that was bad, this is going to be tough. And keep in mind that it's not a one and done. So, you know, we talk about, well, how do we have it? Well, it's how do we start it? So get your mindset. I want to just go through a couple tips if I could.
Perfect.
People want to be heard and they want to feel safe.
Right.
So as people age, you know, they're not as quick on their feet. They're not as strong. Maybe they don't see as well. You know, they have limitations that they didn't have. So it puts them a little off balance. And I think there's pride in this also.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have the conversation, listen openly, even if the person's wishes aren't realistic. If they feel like they're heard, I mean, you don't want to end up in a scenario like the North going Zach and the South going Zach. Like you're just...
Right. Right.
Push against one another because you won't go anywhere. The other thing that I see a lot and I've seen in my home care business is judgment.
Mm.
leave judgment at the door and don't barge in and just start making demands saying, okay, mom and dad, it's like, it's time to move.
Right.
Or, right. You know, because what happens is even though your conversation with them might be well-intended, those kinds of talks lead to hurt feelings and you just don't get anywhere.
Right. And we really want to solve the problem, right? That's what we want to do. Instant solve. And you can't do that.
You can't do that. And, you know, I mean, imagine yourself, put yourself in that person's shoes. Imagine somebody walking into your home and going, hey, Amy, you have to leave tomorrow or in a month, we need to be out of here. It's just time.
Right. Right.
And, you know, they're floored by that. So
devastated. Yep.
They are devastated. It's like, and their pride is hurt. They're hurt personally. It's like, how can my child be speaking to me this way? I would suggest that when you start the conversation, you just start it gently and stop yourself if you go to the refrigerator door and open it up and go, mom, you have 5 yogurts that are expired in here. We need to get the stuff. What are you doing?
Right. Right. You know, oh my gosh. Yeah. I can relate to that, going through pantry and seeing things. Yeah, definitely. Expired things. Yeah. Very good point.
When this starts to happen, it's family first.
Right.
And so family starts to see these things. And for me, it was 15 years later that I finally realized I was a caregiver for my mom. I didn't see myself as a caregiver at all. I didn't relate to that. Right. Even though I was running a home care company, I just thought, well, this is what daughters do. This is what family does.
And how was it with siblings? I mean, that's another aspect of this. I know I'm 1 of 5 and we're scattered all over the country. You know, how is that? I mean, that has to be, that's difficult. It's difficult because everybody deals with it in a different way. What would be your advice around that, having the discussions with siblings?
Well, one of the things that we do at the Devoted Daughter is we have a process that we walk people through called the circles of care. And the idea behind that is, and you can use this in so many different ways, but this is a great example of using the circles of care. At the center of the circle are the people that you call in the middle of the night.
Okay.
And as you go out to the edge, to the perimeter, those are folks that are involved but wouldn't be those urgent caregivers or folks that you would call in the middle of the night.
Right.
And what I've seen happen really effectively, and, you know, not everybody gets along, and I get it. Every family has their stuff. But figuring out who can do what and when can they do it? You know, you might start this process and your sister might have little kids and you might be 5 years into it. And now she's able to do more. She has more time.
Right.
And
right.
People often consider, you know, the person with the most, who's most financially stable takes the brunt of it.
Right.
This isn't all about money. You know, a lot of it in our family, it was money, time, skill. You know,
sure.
Break it down into what people can contribute and how does that come together?
Right. So you can see where you can add value. So you get rid of that guilt, because I know that will set in. You know, you feel guilty. You're not there. You're not there in their day to day. So that's very good advice. Use your gifts. Use where your expertise is.
Well, yeah, I mean, in our family, I'm kind of the doer and the leader, and I'm not as patient. I wish I could say that I was, and I was, you know, there for my mom and listened to her. I was there for hours and hours and days, but my sister-in-law was the one who was the most patient. That was such a gift to me. My mom was still always cared for and attended to. So there was guilt there. But I think if you can look at the other people around you, and it doesn't necessarily always have to be family.
Right. You know? That's true.
And getting other folks involved, neighbors and people, you know, it's like when an emergency happens, everyone kind of rushes in and then they go away and you're like, okay.
Right. Now we really need you. Yes.
Now exactly. We really need you. And so it's kind of incumbent upon you to say, you know, Susan offered to take mom to her hair appointment next week. I'm going to call her and see if she's really willing to do that, because that would really help me. So
good point.
You have to kind of take some initiative. And I know it's hard when things are, you know, scrambled, but it's like, just call on people because they are volunteering to help, but then they don't realize, they have no idea what's happening in your 24/7.
Right, right. Yeah, that's so true. Let's talk a little bit about housing options, because I know there's so many, and now I'm seeing some just in my own community, 55 and over. I mean, these communities that are all over the place for aging adults, aging parents. I think back to the conversation that I had with my own parents, and I know my siblings would agree, they were adamant about not wanting to go into what we used to call nursing homes. I don't even know if we call them that anymore. Can you go over just some of the options? There are so many that are available to us to just help us, you know, help support our parents as they age.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to touch on the comment that you just made. 90% of people, when asked, want to stay home.
Yeah. 90.
Wow. 90%. And I know that's not realistic, but think about what we just spoke about. Like, okay, it may not be realistic, but I need to hear them out.
Right. Right.
And
90%. Wow.
You know, there's 6 months. Well, let's, you know, we've got a 6 month plan and we're going to look at that. So there are so many options. I'm going to kind of start with the things that center around home and then we'll work our way through. There are the 55 and over communities that you just mentioned.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. And they're all kinds of, they're high rises, they're condos, they're little trailer parks are popping up all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those are, you know, for folks that are independent. So it's really a replacement for independent living.
Okay.
Starting at a younger age.
Right.
Adult daycare is another one.
Okay.
And a lot of those that's really a daycare program as it states. In many of them, they're multi-generational. So they'll have young kids there and they'll have seniors.
Mm,
and it's pretty cool because they, you know, they teach one another.
Right, right.
And
right.
With families separated, there's a lot of children who don't see grandparents or grandparents who don't see their grandkids.
Right, so it's called adult daycare.
It's called adult daycare. And there's also programs that are popping up where they've recreated like the 1940s in a building. So
I've seen that on in the paper, newspaper or something. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And that is a form of adult daycare, but it's just taking that person, because most folks who are living with Alzheimer's or another form of dementia will remember the past, but not the present.
Hmm.
And so it puts them back into that familiar environment with newspapers and telephones that dial. And the other one is in-home care, which is what I did for 11 years. And that's where a home health aide comes into the home or wherever the person calls home. So it might even be additional help in an assisted living type environment. For all of these things, I want to caution your listeners that there are rules and laws that vary by state. So,
okay. For
example, in some states, in-home care can manage medications. In other states, they can't touch it.
Really?
So, yeah, every single state is different, so you need to check that out in your particular state. And then there's what's called home health. And I want to just spend a moment here to tell your listeners the difference between in-home care and home health, because I hear these terms used interchangeably all the time. Home health, in-home care is non-medical care. There is not a physician on staff. There's no one writing medical orders. Many times there are nurses on staff, but there is not a physician. Home health is where a physician is on staff. They have physicians, occupational therapists, physical therapists, RNs, bath aides, etc. And typically, this is a service that is covered by insurance, but has to be prescribed by a doctor. I always recommend when people are leaving a rehabilitation center, a hospital, and they can't get to a physical therapy appointment, or they're too sick to get out, that they ask the doctor for home health. And then they've got that additional layer of support. And it won't continue forever. It will continue until the person is no longer progressing. So once they hit a plateau, then the home health benefit goes away.
Okay.
But it's great to have that extra oversight and assistance. You know, I mean, if somebody's recovering from a major surgery or they've had, you know, knee replacement surgery or something that's going to be limiting, to have people come to you is an amazing thing.
Is it likely that you would get that list from your physician, or is this something that you find, you know, are people running ads to be home health care aides, or, you know, how do they find that?
Well, I think this is something a lot of physicians will recommend it. And again, this varies by state.
Right. Okay.
But if they don't recommend it and you feel you need it, you're going to have to ask for it because it's got to be prescribed in order for it to be covered by insurance.
Has to be prescribed. Okay.
Yep.
Very interesting.
And in-home care and home health can work very, very effectively together. So what home health doesn't do is they don't show up there for 3 hours every day. They call you in the morning and they say, hey, Kelly, I'm going to be there. This is your physical therapist. I'm going to be there at 2:00. I'll see you then. So you're expected to be home.
Right.
And in-home care comes in on a scheduled basis because typically that's a private pay service. So, you know, it's not. They're not providing ongoing support. It's for a specific purpose.
For a specific purpose. Oh, interesting. Boy, that's great to have those defined. They're separate things. Interesting. Let's talk about one of the things that I get this comment from listeners and from, I get this question all the time. You know, you'll go and see your parents and you haven't seen them for a few weeks or a few months and you walk in and you say, oh my gosh, you know, they're not eating properly. Nutrition is coming up a lot. At least people are asking me about it. How can you help us with that? You know, they're not eating as much. They're not buying the proper foods. Is there expertise you can share on that?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons for someone that who's not eating well or taking care of themselves, basically.
Right.
And you really need to evaluate the whole picture. Like what's been happening? Have they lost a spouse recently? Are they depressed? Has something changed with them medically? When's the last time they had a medical workup? Do they have a chronic disease? You know, eating a lot of times is maybe they've been prescribed a new medication and food tastes different.
There you go. I never thought about that.
Yeah. Maybe their sense of smell is off.
Right.
People living with dementia often, you know, they go to the sweet and salty. And so you'll see them over-salting or over-sweetening their foods.
Wow.
So there may be a medical reason that this is happening, but it also just may be, you know, they're down in the dumps.
Yeah. Yeah. They're depressed. Yep.
Depressed. Or, you know, this used to happen with my mom and, you know, the eating thing was really important because she was an insulin-dependent diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And she was also brittle, which means her sugars were very difficult to control. And so I always and she couldn't see on top of it. So I always wanted her to have choices. So I'd make, you know, lots of things and have them in the fridge. And she said, overheard her saying to my gram one day, Kelly's just making me so much food. I can't handle it.
Wow.
I don't want this. And I went, oh, wow. It's harder to eat when you're not hungry.
Right.
And she just, it was too much. And
yeah.
I just wanted to give her choice, but I didn't realize the choice was causing her anxiety really over the food.
That's so hard though. Yeah. There's such a fine balance there.
There is a fine balance. And then, you know, there's the other piece of it where it's kind of the better bad choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have them eating something than nothing. And,
Right. You
know, as we're talking about eating, the other thing that happens really frequently with seniors is dehydration.
Sure. I bet it does.
They don't get, as people age, they don't get thirsty.
Really?
Yeah. And so they don't think about it.
Yeah.
And
right.
That is another thing that becomes overwhelming for people. It's like, I can't drink anymore. So what I like to do is start first thing in the morning and even with a cup that you can measure from and just so that they can start working on it right away.
Mm-hmm. Because, makes sense.
You know, and you don't want to drink, you know, a gallon of water at the end of the day and be up all night
Right.
Going to the bathroom either.
Oh, so, yeah.
And people who are taking diuretics or other medications like that often will say, well, I don't want to do that because I don't have to go to the bathroom a million times.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need to look at the whole picture and be a detective, as you do with so many things, and kind of zero in on what's going on with that person.
Right. I mean, I can remember my dad taking so many medications for Parkinson's, and he would literally put them in his hand, take them all with a sip of water, and that was it. One sip. You know, never taking the proper amount. That's so interesting about dehydration. When we had a conversation, I don't know, a month ago, something like that, you made such a good point, and I've shared it with so many people, because you said, you know, you go out with your girlfriends, or you go out, you know, you're out for an evening, and you're sitting around, and you're saying, well, how are your parents? How's your mom doing? Oh, good. She's fine. You know, and then somebody else says, well, how's your dad? Oh, fine. You know, we don't go there in these conversations. We don't say, and you said this, you said, you know, you don't say, yeah, my dad's actually peeing in a pot. You know, I have to care for him all the time. We don't have those conversations. It's just incredible. Let's talk about doctor's appointments. I can relate to this a bit because I was able to go along on a few doctor's appointments with my parents over the years. And do you find that it's almost like your parents revert back to a child? I mean, I found that. I hate to say it, but I was the one taking the notes and everything. And your parent would almost sit there looking at the doctor like anything they said, you know, they weren't going to challenge them on anything. Do you find that?
I think it really varies by person.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're sick, it's hard to challenge someone. Or you have to remember, too, that in a lot of these appointments or environments, if someone's talking fast, even at the pace we're speaking right now, a lot of folks can't process that.
Right, right.
So you may be having conversations in a physician's office where you have a limited amount of time. You have a limited amount of things you need to get.
Yeah.
I mean, you have things you need to get accomplished, right?
Right.
That's why it's so important to have an advocate and to be prepared in advance. Because, I remember my mom just like being all dressed up and looking adorable. And we're meeting with a heart surgeon,
right?
Open heart surgery. And she looks like a million bucks. And but he's looking at her medical records going, you're a really sick person.
Yeah.
This is really serious. And one of the things that I always tried to do was, because my mom couldn't see, I think it was even more prevalent, was that the physicians would talk to either myself or my brother.
Right, right.
And especially my younger brother, who is a physician, they automatically went to him.
Yeah, yeah.
And all three of us kind of made a pact saying, when that started to happen, we would look at whoever was speaking to us and say, you need to talk to my mom. She's the patient.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And
so, you know, it's like, we are going to support her in her decisions. You know, she has the capacity to make this. You need to speak to her about this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're here to listen and support and make sure that she gets it all. And that as a family, we're going to make the best decision we can. But at the end of the day, we need her to understand what's going on here. So especially if they have an agenda and they come in and it's like, okay, well, I've got this, 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 and this. This happens a lot in primary care because primary care doctors are referring out to specialists. You need to get this test and do this and do this and do this. And if you don't have a relationship with the person or you haven't gotten to know them, it's tough. They don't have a lot of time. Having the advocate or having someone, and this goes back to, you know, when you've got five brothers and sisters or you've got siblings, who's going to do what?
Yep. Yep. Designating roles. Yep. Makes so much sense. Yeah.
And you can't go to every single appointment. The other thing that I think is helpful in this is keeping a Google Docs, you know, calendar, or keeping information all in one place. I know for me, my mom was in the hospital so much, I would leave and just feel exhausted. And then I'd have to call my gram and my uncle and her best friend. And
everybody.
Like,
yeah.
Everybody. Like, this is what happened today. This is where we are.
That's so true. Let's talk about medicines. I think you and I shared this too in a conversation when we were clearing out the house after my mom passed. I can't even tell you how many bottles of medications were in their closet between my mom and my dad. And I know this comes up a lot. Do you have any advice on, you know, it's a lot of times you say, oh, dad's not taking his medicine. Well, that's okay. Now we know he's not, but how are we going to solve that? How do we have that conversation with them? Are there some tips that you can share about that?
Well, one of the first things you need to do, and I have a whole section on the playbook for aging parents in the playbook for aging parents about this, but you really need to get your arms around what are they supposed to be taking.
Right, and right.
This is not just prescription, but this is also over the counter.
Yeah, and exactly.
You have to think about this and think about how many drugs are now over the counter that were not 20 years ago. And, you know, I think people have this sense that, well, I just got it at Walgreens. It's safe. It's okay. It's not going to hurt me. I was able to buy it at Walgreens.
Yes. Yes. I heard that. Yep. Exactly. Well,
you know, you need a complete comprehensive list for each person of what they're taking. And this can be really tough because it gets personal with people. And when people are aging, they lose a lot of things. Maybe they've lost a spouse. They've lost a pet. Maybe they've retired from their job, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The medication thing, it's like, it's personal to them. Like, I can take care of this myself. This is none of your business. You know, and you just said it was in their closet. It was like in a private space.
It was, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, that brings up another point is not all medication should be stored in a closet.
Right. Yeah, I mean, good point.
Some of it needs to be stored in a different way.
Right.
So if nothing else, I mean, this can be a matter of life and death, having this list. Mm-hmm. If one of your parents ends up in the ER because they got in a car accident and no one knows what medication they're taking and nobody in the family has a current list, that makes it really problematic for the healthcare professional.
Yeah, that's a good point. So did you have that like in a Google Doc that you could share with your siblings that, I mean, you had that running list?
We had that running list.
Good and idea.
In addition to that, it was always printed.
And, okay.
We kept a plastic sleeve and we had all the necessary documents printed and we put them on the inside of the closet door so that in case of emergency, if a first responder was there, if somebody was there, everybody knew where the list was.
Wow. That's a great idea. Yeah. I never would have thought of that. Oh, I bet the listeners right now are thinking, wow, I'm going to go do that right now. That's a great idea. Makes so much sense.
The other piece that I think, you know, when you say dad's not taking his medications oftentimes should be given at different times of the day, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of devices to organize pills and medications, but you should always keep one of the pills in the original container so that you have a control sample.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, because, well, just think about it. If you fill up a medication box for 2 weeks and it spills, you know, someone tips it over and all the pills are all over the floor. How do you know what's what?
Wow. That's a great point.
If you've got a control sample and that you can kind of get the medication out, put it on the counter and go, okay, I've got to put all these back in the right spot.
Yeah, exactly.
This happens. This is something that I think you can check on too. And you just ask permission. You know, so much of this can be handled by just saying, Mom, is it okay if can I just take a peek at this?
Yeah. Ask permission. Right.
You know, versus just assuming. Mm-hmm. It's still their home. It's still their body, right? They want to participate in life.
What a wealth of knowledge you are. I know that in our next episode, which we're going to do separately, we're going to talk about Medicare, insurance options, power of attorney, all those things that are all so important that we don't know about. You are incredible, Kelly. I mean, just your own personal story and then your expertise. I know I'm going to link both, your website and things to this episode. You know, one thing I like to do at the end of each episode is kind of have my guests leave us with something inspiring. And certainly this whole conversation we just had is so insightful and you shared so much knowledge. But if there's somebody listening that is parts of this really resonated and they just haven't been able to take that first step or have that conversation, just leave us with some words that will really inspire them to take action.
Well, I wanted to just share a story with you. My gram lived until 2 days before her 100th birthday. And wow. She was 99 at the time. And we were walking down the hall. And she looked at me and she grabbed my hand and she said, "You know, honey, I'm not going to live forever. It's the cycle of life. There's new babies coming into this family. You know, it's the cycle of life." And I just wanted to take my hands and put them over my ears and go, "Da da 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 da, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to talk about this. Why are we talking about this?"
Right.
And I want to just encourage, and that was just, I was in denial, really. I didn't want to lose her. And, you know, as selfish as that may sound, I was just like, "Oh, I can't." And we would joke and say, "You better take your cell phone because I'm going to need to chat with you."
Right, right.
But take the time to be present. And there are just so many days when I sit and think, "Oh, I wish I could ask Graham that question. I wish she was here right now. I wish she could tell me that story." And just be present and in the moment. Be with your family. Love your family. And ask the questions, because someday you won't be able to.
Yeah. Boy, that's incredible. Yep. Yep. Be present. Ask the questions. That's great, Kelly. Thank you so much. I look forward to recording the next episode with you that will go, you know, into details about other things and this whole process. But I appreciate the time, and thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Today's episode was a powerful one. You know, it's hard to imagine your parents in a way that, you know, they seem as though they might not be able to care for themselves like they used to, or you're seeing changes. I wanted to leave this episode with a quote that I found when I was researching the show, and it simply says this: "To care for those who once cared for us is one of the highest honors. Caregiving often calls us to lean into love we didn't know possible. In the heart of every caregiver is a knowing that we are all connected." So until next time, go forth. Be awesome. Take care of yourself and take care of those around you.